You're listening to AGR, Alabama Guard Radio, the official podcast of the Alabama National Guard. This is our first episode. We're very excited to be here. I'm Staff Sergeant Jacob Hearn, and with me today is Sergeant Megan Terry.
We have the opportunity today to talk with Lieutenant Colonel Joe Spangler and Sergeant Willie Jackson about the accident that forever altered the course of Willie's life.
And how the bond between an officer and an enlisted soldier transcended rank and how their friendship helped in Willie's recovery.
Colonel Spangler and Sergeant Jackson's friendship started years ago in Afghanistan.
My name is Lieutenant Colonel Joe Spangler. I'm the Vice Chief of Staff of the Alabama Army National Guard. I've known Sergeant Jackson for quite a while. He and I deployed together in 2011 to Afghanistan. I was a company commander then at the Alpha Company of the 115th Expeditionary Signal Battalion. And Willie was a specialist, right? Willie, you were a specialist then, right?
Correct.
So Willie and I had a unique bond, even as I was a captain then, and he was a specialist in the company. We took 137 soldiers over there, but Willie was always a standout soldier in the ranks. He was very unique in the fact that he had unexplainable athletic ability. He could run, jump, just a freak of an athlete. And so we had that connection. We'd work out together. We'd challenge each other in the gym. We built a special bond between that. Willie would always encourage others around him to try to beat me, and I would try to beat him. And it was just always very competitive in nature between he and I. We had a great deployment. I will say this about Willie. His feet stink the worst of any person I've ever smelled. I went to go visit him, and he was in a forward operation base and had been snowing, and his boots had been wet on and off for several days, and it was very austere conditions where we were at. And I was sleeping in a bunk. He was below me. I was on the top bunk, and he had his socks out trying to dry. Kept me up all night smelling his... Yeah, weeks without a bath, nothing but snow. We had a special bond. I've always thought highly of him. He was always a leader. Even though his rank didn't show, he was a leader in the company, and I've always respected Willie because of that.
Me and Joe, I think we met way before deployment. You were a lieutenant, if you can remember. I think we were qualifying at summer camp, like, early in when I first got in. You asked me to help you make sure you could find the targets because you had a wager going on. You remember that?
I'm sure I did.
Yeah, this was early. You were a lieutenant then.
Yep.
And I remembered you from then, and then you ended up becoming our commander, and our relationship kind of got real strong. Like you said, you were big on PT. I like that. You know, a very competitive person. We got along really good. I liked the way you carried yourself, your family, your kids. You were just a great example of somebody I looked up to in the Guard anyway. Over time, our bond just got strong. Stronger and stronger. Like you said, we've always kept in touch. We've always kept communication. In 2011, my dad passed. You and Chaplain were the two I talked to. I remember you telling me, you know, you'd be there for me with whatever happens. Ever since then, you've always made sure you keep in touch, whether it's just a call and text or just, hey, Willie, how you doing? And it's always been that way. It meant a lot to me, you know, because a lot of people say they'll be there for you, but I hadn't heard from them. You know what I mean? That's played a major part for me.
Yeah, I remember that conversation. I remember when we got that Red Cross message. We were a week from coming home. We were in Kandahar.
Yeah.
That was a difficult conversation we had. I remember, I know how close you and your dad were. And me and the chaplain, we came and got you and asked you to step off to the side. And we went inside that bunker, cried on each other's shoulder. Yeah.
That was a rough day.
It was.
I mean, just through experiences like that, I think we grew stronger. Even once I became a sergeant, you know, you've always pushed me to do things and step outside the box and, you know, be a leader. I guess you just seen some qualities in me. Yeah, you've always pushed me to be a better person and to better my career, especially in the Guard. You've been a great example to me. I don't know about what anybody else would say. Only discrepancies I have, them late drills we were having for a couple of years. Other than that, everything was great.
Well, I also have a son that's in the Guard that deployed in 2017. I went to Willie throughout the deployment. And if I've got an NCO that I wanted to be and trust my son with, and Willie and I had that conversation. Look after him, take care of him. And so that's the kind of guy we're talking about, that you want your son to be, to follow after. So That's the type of bond he and I have.
After their deployment in Afghanistan, this friendship between an officer and an enlisted soldier was about to take a huge turn. Colonel Spangler could not have been prepared for the news he was about to receive.
I'm at the state headquarters, back now as the 115th Battalion Commander. February 2022, is that right, Willie?
That's right. February 19th.
February 19th, 2022. I got a phone call, and they said, "Did you hear what happened to Willie?" And that's when I got the news that Willie had had an accident.
It was Saturday. I was riding my Razor. Was in West Point, Tennessee, riding trails, climbing a hill that I've always did. I mean, we go ride usually every other weekend or so. So I climbed this hill several times. Pulling the hill, got to the top. My Razor flipped. My buddies had came over and pushed my Razor back over because I was upside down. They pushed my Razor back over. When they flipped me back over, they're like, you know, cut the Razor off. And I was like, man, I can't move. They cut it off and they're like, what's going on? I'm like, I don't know, I can't move. They're like, well, maybe you just got a stinger or something. I'm like, man, I played football all my life. I know what a stinger feels like. And I can't move, you know? So they start touching me. They're like, can you feel this? I'm like, nah. They're like, what's going on? I'm like, I don't know. They med-flighted me to Vanderbilt. I get to Vandy. It was a weird experience because, you know, I'm on a stretcher. They have me in a neck brace, so all I can see is what's above me. And it's just, I'm just seeing lights and doctors going everywhere. And they put me in ICU, and the only question I asked, I was like, am I paralyzed? My doctor came in and he just told me it's too early to say what's going on. Let's examine and see for sure. So I sat in ICU for 2 days. I guess my surgeon, whatever happened, they kept postponing my surgery. So I sat there for 2 days, and as long as 2 days of my life, just not knowing what's what. Will I walk again? Will I, you know, just 1,000 thoughts went through my head. Finally had my surgery. I come out. The prognosis was I had pinched my spinal cord in my C6, and it was incomplete. So what that means, when a spinal cord injury is incomplete, that means you do have sensation below your injury level. So there's possibilities for your nerves to regenerate. I was positive about that. My doctors kept telling me, you know, try to get into the Shepherd Center. It's a very good spinal cord rehab. We contacted Shepherd Center. They came, evaluated me. I got accepted. So I was really excited. So I'm like, okay, this is going to be great. Through social media, Facebook, my story got around a lot of people. And I ended up meeting one of my mentors. He had a car accident and had the same injury level, C6. He walked in and talked to him. And I'm like, man. He's like, yeah, I've been there. It took him about 18 months. And he was back up walking. So I was like, oh, yeah, I got this. So, you know, they told me just go to rehab, do your therapy, do your part, and, you know, the rest will happen.
While Willie was at the Shepherd Center, he stuck diligently to his PT plan. He put in the time and the work. But this situation was really difficult for him because during COVID, the protocols did not allow any visitors to come see Willie besides his sister, who was his sole caretaker at the time. So when Willie found out that Joe Spangler was coming to see him, he was excited but also was left wondering, how did he even get in here?
I'd called him one day and I could tell in his voice that he wasn't okay. Willie was saying he was okay, he's doing good, he's got this, but his voice was not saying the same. Willie also had a relationship at that time through his injury circumstances. That relationship kind of dissolved. That was also a battle he was going through. Not only did he lose his physical ability, but he also lost someone that he cared deeply for. So he was in a lonely spot, and it was only one option. I had to go see him. So I called him. They were still in COVID protocol, like he said. I had asked him, has anybody come to see you? And they said they won't let anybody. That a couple people had asked, and they told him no, nobody. So I changed my tactic. I normally would not take this approach, but I knew the asking approach would not work. So I called, I used my rank and my name, and I told them I was a major at the time, I think. This is Major Spangler. You've got one of my soldiers in your facility. I am coming to see him. I just need to know when would be a good time for that. And the first person said, oh, sir, yes, it's, you know, you're not authorized to do that. It would take my supervisor to even consider that. I said, okay, well, get him on the phone. So went on hold, went to supervisor. The supervisor had the same story. I gave him the same spiel, same response. Okay, well, I'll hold, get your supervisor. The last person I talked to, they said, sir, I understand. I said, listen, me and my soldier, we went through a hard time in Afghanistan. He had my back then. He's going through a hard time right now. I've got his back. I'm coming. Sir, that's going to take the hospital administrator. This is the only person that can approve this. I said, okay, put him on the phone. So they kept me on hold for about 10 minutes. I thought they were not going to come back. I thought they were just going to keep me on hold till I hung up. They came back and said they approved. Great. When should I come? Willie, remember the first thing I told you when I walked in?
I can't remember, sir.
I'm not going to treat him with kid gloves.
Yeah.
I talked to him straight on. The only way I know how to do it. And I walked in to there. He was sitting in his wheelchair. And I told him, soldier, I'm a commissioned officer. When I walk in the room, you're supposed to stand up.
Yeah.
You're supposed to stand up. Get on your feet, soldier. And we just had a great conversation. I remember his nurses came in after we talked for a while. They said, who do you know? How did you get in here? They said, you must know somebody here at this hospital that you pulled some strings. Not always what you know is who you know. I said, I don't know anybody up here. They said, we don't believe that. They said, who do you know? They just kept asking me, who do I know? Remember what I told them, Willie?
What did you say?
I told them, I said, I don't know anybody at this hospital, but here's who I do know. I know Jesus Christ, and Jesus sent me on a mission to talk to this. That's what I did. And me and Willie went into a conversation about purpose in life, and he's got to find a new purpose. You know, he's got to learn new skills.
Yeah.
That there's a plan for his life, and what he thought was his plan may not be the plan. And we just had a long conversation about staying motivated, staying positive, look for things that he can do, not focus on the things that he can't do. That just kind of solidified our relationship. That's when it went from Major Spangler and Sergeant Jackson to Willie and Joe.
It's a great visit. We talked about a lot, shared a lot. But that there, too, is a moment that stood out to me. He was serious about our friendship and my well-being. He brought me some gifts, brought me a Kindle, you know, I could read books, gave me a book to read.
Disciplines of a Godly Man.
Disciplines of a Godly Man. I was about to say seven disciplines, but yeah, Disciplines of a Godly Man. What else? Was it a harmonica you brought me?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was supposed to be learning the tune, but I haven't did that yet. I'm going to have to get on it, keep my mind occupied.
So Willie stuck to his plan. He stayed vigilant in his PT. He kept his mind occupied with reading, being trying to be social where he could. And when he told us the story, he was coming up to his 2-year mark of his PT plan, which was going to be the next milestone in his recovery.
At this time, I realize I'm coming up on my 2-year mark, which in 4 days will be 2 years. I called Joe and we talked, and I just told him I had hit a low spot. I just felt like I had worked hard and was focused. You know, I felt like I was a decent human being, you know, and I was just wondering, like, well, you know, why me? Like, why did this happen to me? Why am I stuck like this? I just felt like, what can I do? I'm a quadriplegic. I have little hand movement, but pretty much I'm dependent on everything. Someone has to bathe me. Someone has to prepare my food, pretty much do everything for me. I just kind of felt like, what am I here for? What can I do? Me and Joe had a talk, and he was just telling me, just ask God. There's a purpose for everything. Just ask him, what is your purpose? What is your plan for me? I remember even when he was at Shepherd and he talked to me, he said he could see me being able to speak about my injury helping people. I do realize, you know, that may be something that I could do. About 3 or 4 months ago, was a guy from our area had a car accident. He's paralyzed as well, so I've been kind of mentoring him, and I talk to him from time to time. Crazy when people see things and you ask, what's your plan and purpose, and it kind of just comes to you. I know Joe asked to present me to speak here and kind of tell my story, so everything's falling into place of where it needs to be. It's been a rough time, a lot of ups and downs. It's been some mornings I wake up, I just kind of have to pep myself up, like, you know, it's another day, but we got to fight, we got to keep going. Even through times, I think my biggest help is my family. They support me a lot. My fiance pushes me. She supports me. She encourages me. She can usually tell when I'm down, so she kind of goes the extra mile to pick me back up. My kids really motivate me. Friend support, like Joe. I have a lot of friends back home as well that call and check on me from time to time. It's been a big help for me as well. It's a different lifestyle. I've just kind of got into dealing with my mental health myself. Just started talking to a psychiatrist, getting to the point where I'm accepting my anger and accepting where I'm at and changing my expectations of what I will be able to do. A lot easier said than done, still working on it day to day. 2 years in, it seems like a long time. I've got a lot of support groups, so I've talked to people that's been in a chair, you know, 15, 20 years. It takes time. It's kind of like I'm a newborn baby, so I'm still, to this day, learning what I can and can't do, still learning acts of getting independencies. I'm still every day learning new ways of life, so I haven't figured it out yet.
And he's seeking help. That's important that he's not gone into isolation or the support groups.
And that's a big thing. At first, I was kind of just keeping everything into myself, trying to just deal with it and being a man, you know, not wanting to express my feelings. I've never had any history of, depression or mental health stuff. So I didn't know. So new to me. I realized that it is good to have an outlet of, you know, be able to express yourself, have people to talk to that's been in your situation or that's dealing with your situation. It just helps to even just to have people to relate to. Typically, I don't see people in a chair that's like me. So when I do get in my support groups and talk to people, it makes me feel, you know, good that I'm not the only one in the world that's sitting in a chair. You know what I mean?
Thank you both so much for taking the time to open up, be vulnerable, and to share this incredible story. I mean, Staff Sergeant Hearn, what an amazing journey between an officer and someone who's enlisted.
Yeah, you know, one, I think it's a mark of a great leader to step up for their soldiers like this, even when they're not in their command anymore, even when they're even not in the Army anymore. I think it's a really motivational story from Willie's side, too, that even after 2 years of all this hard work and having these peaks and valleys in his journey, that he is still staying motivated and looking to the next steps on how he can redefine himself and improve himself.
You're so right. And that resiliency is something that we're told about a lot in the military and through various trainings. But when it actually comes to the time where you put that into practice, it's completely different. So I think it'd be really awesome if we brought in our friends Darius White, who's the suicide prevention coordinator, and then also Chaplain Martin, to kind of fill us in more on how we can improve our resiliency and what that actually looks like in the day-to-day lives of us in the Guard or anyone in the military. We'd really like to know what resiliency means to each of you. And Chaplain Martin, being a chaplain for so many years, I'm sure you've dealt with different scenarios in one form or another regarding resiliency. Could you explain to us, in your experience, what that looks like for you?
For me, to be resilient, I always think about the rubber band, that it's stretchable, flexible, and within our military context, you have to be flexible, especially when you look at everything from missions that's driven. And sometimes, from the soldier's perspective, you know, when you're hit with life, because most of us wear two hats, civilian side as well as Army side, or, you know, Air Guard or what have you, then you have to put in place, you know, what are my triggers that helps me, or what triggers me, but also knowing and understanding what brings me back to the place of being able to be productive and carry the mission forward. So I see that as being flexible and being able to, you know, move in different locations and being able to navigate the waters to you know, to be resilient.
Do you feel like with your position and your role in the different lives of soldiers that you personally had to adapt some kind of idea of how to be resilient as well?
I do. I think so. I think when talking with soldiers that you have to see one where they are. And I try to meet them where they are because I like to listen first and see, you know, what is it that they are going through? What is it that they may be experiencing? And then from there, not that I'm fixing anything, but just to hear them out and maybe to be able to navigate them with, you know, whatever situation that they are facing. Because most of the time what I've learned is that soldiers will work their own problems out if you sit and listen to what they're saying, because sometimes they just want to be heard.
And Darius, what's your position here at JFHQ?
Okay, yeah, I do suicide prevention here for the state of Alabama.
Yeah.
You know, in the civilian world, suicide, it also is, you know, an issue, but I don't think that it has been highlighted the way it's been highlighted here in the Army National Guard. But the numbers are significantly higher here in the Guard as well. And just like he said, we're guys kind of like juggling the difficulties of both sides, both in the military and the civilian world. So just from the outside looking in, like, that's what I can see. You have to be the 9-to-5 person Monday through Friday, and then on the weekend, you know, you get to get to play. I don't want to say anything offensive. I was going to say play dress up. Sorry. but on the weekend, you know, you get to go out into the field and actually do the work that military service members actually do. And so juggling that, I think, can be very, very difficult. It's not like active duty where, like, everyone is on the same installation and you see the same people 7 days a week. You know exactly where to go. You can go to the chaplain here or doctor here. You can go to the behavioral health here. But in the civilian or in the Army National Guard, once you guys leave the weekend, then you have to, like, function as just a regular person. And honestly, as a regular person, it's also very difficult to maneuver this.
So I actually had a question with you. You bring it up, like, the civilian and military side. Yeah. So, you know, I know Army-wide suicide is a huge issue. I know it's also a huge issue, you know, really around the world, but especially with the military. But, you know, if just focusing on Alabama, you know, is this something that we're still really struggling with in the state? And if so, what are some of the programs in place or some of the things we are doing to sort of mitigate and get help for people who need it?
Okay, so it's really difficult for me to compare, you know, like, how big of it is actually an issue here in the state of Alabama versus, you know, Georgia or Tennessee or wherever. But what I will say is, like, since we are in down south, Bible Belt region, you know, so, you know, God and church is really, really big. But also we kind of have this stigma of, like, getting help that, like, other people will think less of you. And I think that's something that maybe we as Southerners, you know, have adapted in our culture. So the need to be resilient at all times. And, like, there's really no space for you to, like, I don't know, like, mess up or be a human at any point without getting overtaken by life, if you will.
Are you trying to say that resiliency is something that comes and goes, like, it flexes with you, like, it changes?
That's actually an interesting perspective. I'd never really thought of it like that. But as Chaplain Martin was explaining, like, his resiliency piece, I was thinking of, like, how did I gain resilience? Most of it was through, like, my childhood and the way my parents brought me up. But I've also kind of seen how, like, how similar I am with, you know, our generation is kind of like around 30. I'm not telling my age. But young people who are around, like, 20. They grew up almost the same, but also very, very different. I have learned that the way that they cope with life is a whole lot different than us. I know our parents were all tough as nails, and us, the people around, like, the millennial age, we think we're tough as nails, but we're starting to realize, like, we're not, but it's okay.
With what each of you guys do, do you find yourself talking to different people that are being almost too individually resilient, where they're not seeking that help? Or do you find that more people are actively seeking help for these issues that they're going through and understanding they need someone else to help them in that process?
So I think over the years, like, 15 years in the Guard, and what I've seen, the change as far as how we even use the verbiage. Just to go back and touch on, you asked Darius about resiliency. Does it come, does it go? So I thought about resiliency can be community. You know, those, when you look at it from military context, those, you know, to our left, to our right, that we know we can count on each month or even outside once we're finished with drill, you know, hey, my section leader or my, you know, my company commander, my battalion commander, sergeant major. So it's more than just being individualistic, I believe. But I think we have a concept that you have to be resilient, you know, by yourself instead of having that community of family that's there with you. Because we all go through tough days. And as Darius said, you know, we build resiliency through our struggles or through, you know, the negative times. But also, I think through, you know, the good times, you can gain resiliency also from that particular.
So can we help each other then with resiliency with that in mind?
I think so, because everybody, we all, you know, just sitting here, we come from different backgrounds. So my experience, my the things that I've gone through, I think can you know, help you, you know, help Sergeant Hearn here, and vice versa, you know, what you guys have gone through and gain, and I think it can help me as well. So we have to lean on each other and not look at it as, hey, I'm weak, or this is, you know, being weak, but is that, hey, I need some help and I need to turn to someone, you know, for that help, or to just give me some guidance to help me see my way through.
Yeah, sorry. I wanted to like add on to what you're saying.
Go for it.
I think the piece that he said is really big about, well, just because I haven't went through something doesn't mean that I can't learn resilience through him.
Yeah.
Right? So one of the, I think, the most effective methods of or education, right? Mm-hmm. Peer support, I guess, talking about this issue is open testimony. And so in my experience, you know, I'm a pretty young guy. Get up in front of a group of maybe 100. The ages vary from all different. You know, like you have some people who are fresh in, 18. Some people who are on the way out, 59. I don't really know what the age is, right?
Mm-hmm. They won't tell you.
Yeah, they definitely won't
tell you. Nobody will tell you the truth anyway.
I don't even ask, right? But what I will say is I have seen or heard various different responses, you know, like based on the age group. And you'll be surprised of like how many young people will be willing to like speak up and talk about their problems after they see an older individual, right? You notice I said older, right? an older individual, you know, who's maybe went through something like them or maybe is around the same age as their parents, right? A mother, father figure. Someone that you trust who has been in the uniform longer than I have. And you see that they have went through regular struggles just the same way as I have. And honestly, that is one of the things that helps these younger soldiers speak out. Well, like, yeah, maybe I have been struggling with this. But I think the more effective piece is when they say, hey, I have struggled with mental health, but I got help and I wasn't afraid to get help. That is what encourages like the rest of everyone to speak up and be like, well, you know, yeah, I experienced this too and I experienced this too. So learning resilience from each other.
You know, Chaplain said something with, you know, about community, with you talking about learning resilience from each other, just from a personal point, something I've learned from some leaders in the past is to try to identify when people are struggling. That's a good point to step in as a leader. And the thing I had a leader at ALC tell me one time was, we don't have soldier issues in the Army. We have people issues. Mm. We know how to be soldiers. You just have to put on the right uniform, be at the right place, right time, do your PT. Four things, super easy. Yeah. If you're not accomplishing those things, it's probably not because they're a bad soldier. It's probably because they're having a people issue. Mm-hmm. You know, there's something going on outside of the Army. There's something going on outside of the military that's causing them not to hit those really simple stepping stones. But I think the issue is knowing how to help once we see that, because it's all too easy to say, well, they're late for drill again. He's always like that, you know. Yeah. So
being able to kind of like, what is your... identifying those,
identify an issue and then looking at it from this lens of trying to, I guess, really provide a help to somebody who might need it, or you know, because it's a snowball effect. You start ignoring this guy because he's not showing up at drill on time, or you know, they're always ate up, or you know, they're not passing PT because they're drinking all the time, doing whatever, and we sort of write it off. And that's part of it, is building those skills to talk to those individuals and really learn how to help. And I think that's something a lot of people struggle with, is knowing how to help.
Okay.
Yeah. And that would, I feel like, be great advice, especially from you and you. Like, what are some things that you do to identify when a soldier really needs that extra, like, when you really need to look into care for a soldier, even if it's just minor? How do you broach that subject?
So one, for me, I like to talk. So I try to engage every soldier, if you want to say small talk, you know, hey, you know, what are you doing? You know, what, you know, are you in school? Most of the younger soldiers, like you're saying, some are in schools, or whether it be college or tech school. And just to, you know, I try to read people as far as, you know, body language, facial expression, and just having that connection with them. And that's one of the unique things I think I love about chaplaincy, is that being part of the staff, but also special staff, that I can, you know, I can get in and intermingle with soldiers, as well as talk to leadership, you know, to see, hey, you know, is there anything going on with any of your soldiers that you see that I need to be aware of? That's one something special with, you know, platoon leaders or section leaders. I'll ask, hey, anything that I need to be aware of, you know, from your soldiers? Because 9 times out of 10, they know their soldiers, you know, better than I do. Because of the chance that I get to see them. So with that, I think just connecting, you know, with them is able to allow me, you know, to be able to just kind of see things that maybe, you know, others may not see.
It almost sounds like, from what both of you guys are saying, it's like there's this path that resiliency goes down. So you're kind of having to lay these stepping stones along the way between other people getting involved and yourself also being resilient. And there's a lot of these different things that we could be doing and that we can improve on, possibly. Yeah. So it's really awesome to hear you say that, because just like Sergeant Hearn was saying, if there's someone who is being personally resilient, possibly one of us could help them to be resilient in a more efficient way to help them in the long run.
I like the piece that he said, though, about making that personal connection. Now, I'm not in the military, but what I have been doing is observing military culture very, very closely, like since a kid. And just being here in Army National Guard, I can see how much it means for a soldier to actually like trust their leadership, you know? I think that's one of the most difficult things when it comes to addressing these young soldiers. It's like, even if I did have these problems, right? Like, even if I was contemplating killing myself, or I'm homeless, or I can't really feed my family or myself, what would give me a reason to like tell any of you all, you know? So I ask myself that question. Then I try to put myself in the mind of the soldier. I know it's a whole lot of mental work, but like how would I feel if I was them, and like would I trust their leader, you know, to come and disclose personal sensitive information? Do I even think it would be like, what benefit would I get from that? So creating that trust, so soldiers know, like, regardless of the rank, like, this is a person who I can go to with my issue. And I think that's one of the things that helps me just do what I do. Like, I don't see rank, honestly, at all. I see it out of, like, formality and respect. But I see everyone's eyes, you know, like, and that kind of, like, lets me know exactly where their head is at.
So, you know, you guys can speak to this. Sometimes people do see, especially from the chaplain's perspective, they see rank. And the good thing about the unit ministry team is that not only is it an officer that's a chaplain, but also the religious affairs specialist, or NCO, because most of the time, if the enlisted soldier is not comfortable coming to me, then they'll go to the religious affairs specialist and share what they have going on. And of course, you know, I'll hear it, and you know, we move from there. But it is about building trust, because when soldiers know, even family members, when they know that they can trust you, then you know, you kind of have the keys to the kingdom, so to speak, that you're able, you know, to help and assist in so many ways.
Now, one thing that I have noticed specifically in the military, right, when you take one-on-one time, you know, for a soldier, it makes that soldier want to come work for you harder. It's not like one of those, okay, I respect them, so now I can get over, right? I respect them, so like I'm gonna do everything I can to make sure that like this person is taken care of, and I'm doing my job so that I don't make this person look bad, right?
That's true. Not judging. Let me throw that out there, because I think sometimes, and maybe you guys can help me. Well, have you ever felt that if you brought something to the chaplain or maybe one of your soldiers, that the chaplain would judge?
So I have two personal stories real quick to share. So one is, it's not a plug for the National Guard. I mean, you know, I'm always plugging the National Guard, but I do think there is, at least even the active guard, you get to go home, you get to take off the uniform. I mean, yeah, you get to take the uniform off at the end of the day with active duty as well, but a lot of active duty guys live on post, spread around the world. So at least with the guard, when they say like a guard family, I have my leadership, and I feel like much closer to any guard leadership than I ever really have active duty, because I do see them out of uniform sometimes,
okay.
You know, and that can help sort of bridge that to trust, to have a conversation with them. You know, I'll say, you know, the unit I've been in forever, we've always, you know, if it's after hours, we're on a first name basis, you know, and that has really helped when there have been issues in the unit. Now, from a negative standpoint, having been in active duty environments and just all over the guard as well, I think it's less about trust of an individual, but it's so big that sometimes it can fail you. You know, I've used mental health services before to varying degrees of, well, have you tried not being sad? Or, hey, these are some actual steps you can take.
Yeah.
To talking to chaplains who, you know, are on this big active duty base, like downrange, who are talking to guys every day, and you can just tell they're exhausted. To, you know, people who are at home who, you know, are a little bit more personable, a little bit more charismatic. And I feel like that is not necessarily a failure, but like an issue. And that's why I think like it's a larger problem where, hey, it's great we have mental health services, it's great we have chaplains, but also like we need soldiers and leaders to step up to fill in those gaps when there are like cracks in the system.
Absolutely.
Right, to like create that almost like consistency, because if a soldier is seeking out that help, they would probably be more inclined to talk to a leader that they trusted
or
someone they see a lot of the time and have rapport built with.
That's what I was saying, why I like the family piece of the Guard, because I haven't had to seek out a lot of mental health services or, you know, chaplains in the Guard because, you know, hey, at the end of the day, Sergeant Brown is now Jamie, and I can talk to Jamie on a one-to-one level about issues I'm having.
Right.
So.
And that was one reason why I joined the Guard. I felt it was, or it had a family feel to it. So that was, you know, something I was looking for. I always said I'd never go in the military. And based off of what I saw on television, you know, you would see the drill sergeant, you know, yelling, screaming at soldiers. But that's just one piece. So actually, when the Lord put it on my heart to come in, it was 09. And they were talking about the different names of PTSD, how those names have changed from war to war. And that was probably at the height of both wars that was going on during the time. And that day, I saw myself helping families and helping soldiers. And that stayed on my heart for 2 months. I was like, okay.
Into the recruiting office you went.
Yeah, it wasn't that easy, but yes, I did. You know, I love what I do, especially being a chaplain, because it brings a sense of joy and satisfaction knowing that, you know, I'm able to help in whatever capacity, you know, with the soldier, with the family member, and also them feeling that, hey, I'm in a safe space. You know, I can get in this space and not feel that, you know, the hammer is coming down on me, you know, like what you're saying, especially if we're not there. Mm-hmm. You know, from the chaplain's perspective, that you can go to, you know, your leadership and you can talk to Sergeant Brown, if I can use, you know, what you just shared, because you guys are just that close. There's a tight bond and knit that's there. And, you know, when you look at me as a chaplain, you know, most of our chaplains are pastors, you know, within the local community. So you have that continuity where you see him not as Chaplain Martin or, you know, whomever, but you see him as, you know, John or, you know, Jamie, whoever.
Mm-hmm.
He is outside of the Guard.
Yeah, I think that it's a great thing that we have, really, because I feel like someone like you who did ministry before and felt this calling to join, it's almost like you yourself are a presence where you're showing other people that you are what you say that you are and creating that environment. I think that even in this conversation, me personally, I think learned even more about resiliency than I did before. And hearing the things that you each are saying about how we can be there for soldiers, how we can utilize different resources, it's a great tool that, you know, Sergeant Hearn and I can take back and help our future soldiers coming in.
Thank you for listening to the first episode of AGR. It's a really exciting journey to get here. We've been working on this for a long time now. We want to thank everybody who spoke with us in today's episode, and also give a special thanks to Staff Sergeant Thomas Furlow for composing and designing the intro and outro music for this episode.
This podcast would not be made possible if it wasn't for the amazing public affairs team with the Alabama National Guard, so thank you so much. For more information or updates on our show, check out our social media, Alabama National Guard. And Sergeant Hearn, I just want to say a huge thank you to you for sticking it out, taking the time with me day in and day out to make this happen. But I do have to say,
his feet stink the worst of any person I've ever smelled.